to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, sniff some borax, and enjoy this episode of Escape entitled The Vanishing Lad.
The Adventures of Christopher Wells program, formerly scheduled at this time, is now broadcast at a new time on Tuesday evening. Tune in for The Adventures of Christopher Wells next Tuesday and every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
You're alone in Paris. Unable to speak the language, unable to cope with a gigantic conspiracy which seeks to convince you that you are mad. You are the victim of a plot from which there is no escape.
Escape, produced, directed, and tonight written by William N. Robeson. And carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to Paris at the time of the Great Exposition and one of the recurring legends of our time, in Alexander Wilkett's version of the story of The Vanishing Lady.
Another cup of tea, Bruce?
No, thank you, my dear. I just light up my pipe now and have a look at the Evening Standard.
I'd like another, please, Mother.
All right, Alice. Only one sugar, dear. We must watch our figures, you know.
What nonsense. A growing girl like Alice needs plenty of sugar.
See, Mother, Daddy approves.
Perhaps. But Mother is still boss.
Yes, Mother.
There's a dear.
Mother.
Yes, dear.
I've been thinking.
Yes, dear.
I've been thinking about my grandparents.
Oh.
I know all about Daddy's parents. How Grandfather Stanley commanded a dreadnought at the Battle of Jutland.
It was not a dreadnought, Alice. It was a heavy cruiser.
Oh, yes. Heavy cruiser. And he got the VC, and how Grandmother Stanley was a volunteer nurse at Westall Arch when the Zeppelins came over. And I know about your father, too, and how he died in India from his wounds, and how gallant he was at the Khyber Pass, but, Mother?
Yes, dear.
You've never told me anything about Grandmother Winship.
Haven't I?
No, and I'd like to know something
Bruce.
About...
Bruce.
The child's 16. I think it's time she knew.
But, Bruce...
And you'd probably feel better to get it off your chest.
What, Mother? What is it?
Well, my dear... I've never talked about your grandmother because I've always half believed that someday, somehow, she would come down our garden walk and... I know it sounds silly. And explain where she's been for the last 20 years.
Why? What happened to her?
I don't know. And I don't suppose I ever will.
Cynthia, darling, if it's going to upset
no,
you...
No, Bruce, you're quite right. It would be best to get it off my chest, as you put it. As you know, Alice, I was born and brought up in India. And I was about your age when my father was killed in the Khyber campaign. Mother decided to leave India for good and return to her old home in Warwickshire. However, since it was necessary for her to go to Paris to attend to some details of my father's estate, she decided that we should leave the P&O boat in Marseille and proceed by train. You may imagine the timidity with which we two unescorted ladies traveled across France, without the slightest knowledge of the language, and without, indeed, assurance that we could find a hotel room in Paris, though we had telegraphed for reservations from Marseille. You see, the great Paris Exposition had just opened, and the city was jammed with visitors from all over the world. You may imagine our relief when we arrived at the Grand Hotel Universel, and heard the clerk speak in quite understandable English.
Welcome, welcome. You will please to sign the register. air and air.
You have our reservation?
Oh, indeed, yes. Most fortunate, madame, that you telegraphed. For I have reserved for you the last room in the house.
Oh, I'm so relieved. Here, Cynthia. You may as well learn now to sign a register for yourself.
Oh, yes, Mama. Where do I write?
There in that line.
Oh, yes, I see.
Voilà. You are fatigued from your journey, no? I shall have the boy show you to your rooms at once. Chasseur!
Oui, monsieur.
Le parpaing 342 pour mademoiselle et madame Winship, tout de suite.
Bien, monsieur.
This is your baggage, madame?
Yes, these six.
Le voilà, bagage. Simple. Il y a six pièces.
You'd best carry the little one with the medicine in it.
Yes, Mama.
Pardon, mademoiselle.
Thank you. I'll take that one. The little red one.
Très bien. This way, ladies.
Keep your eye on that porter, Cynthia. I don't trust this Frenchman.
Oh, Mama. I don't think he'll make off with our things. Here's the lift.
Troisième étage.
Troisième.
Oh, I do wish we could have gone straight on to Southampton.
But you'd only have had to come back across the channel to see the solicitor, Mama. We really save time this way.
I suppose I mean I wish we hadn't come to Paris at all. It's such a sinister place.
Oh, Mama.
Voilà, le troisième.
This way, ladies, to the right. Attendez.
Eh bien.
338, 340, 342.
Oh,
voilà. Entrez, ladies.
Thank you.
Oh, what a lovely big room. And look, Mama. French windows. And the park out there.
That is this here.
No,
and
thank
the square with the statues on it.
Merci.
Oh, and look at the river,
ladies,
over there. And those beautiful, beautiful bridges. Oh, Mother, it's something out of a book.
Yes, my dear. That's the trouble with Paris. It's so attractive. But underneath, it's evil.
And look at the furniture. The gilt clock. And this lovely marble table. Oh, Mama, everything is so French.
I'll be very glad to be on my way to where everything's English by this time tomorrow. Now, come away from that window and help me get into something comfortable. There's a dear.
Yes, Mama, of course.
I don't know when I've been so tired. I just can't seem to catch my...
Mama. Mama, what's the matter? Mama! Mama, speak to me. Here, I'll get you up into the bed. There. Now, let me loosen your corset. Here, Mama, here are the smelling salts. Breathe deeply, darling. Mama. The telephone. I've got to get a doctor. Hello, operator. Will you please send a doctor up to room number... Oh, let me see. Number 342.
Pardon? Qu'est-ce que mademoiselle dit?
Will you please send a doctor to room number 342?
Je ne comprends pas. Qu'est-ce que mademoiselle dit?
A doctor? A doctor?
Ah, oui, un docteur. Oui, mademoiselle, tout de suite.
While I waited for the doctor, I did everything I could to think of to bring my mother back to consciousness. I massaged her fingers and toes. I put wet cloths on her forehead. I waved the smelling salts under her nose. But she lay silent and white and unmoving like one dead. Only the quick, shallow movement of her breast assured me she was not. And all the time another anxiety possessed me. What if this doctor could not speak English? How should I tell him the circumstances of Mother's unexpected fainting? How should I understand his instructions for treatment? I'm sure it was not long, although it seemed like an eternity before he arrived, accompanied by the manager of the hotel. And to my great relief, they both spoke English. The doctor felt Mother's pulse, took her temperature, and did the usual things that doctors do. Then he turned to the tail-coated hotel manager.
Parle-t-elle français?
Pas un mot. Vous en êtes sûr?
Mais tout à fait. Alors, je ne peux parler à mon aise. Monsieur, ceci, c'est une affaire très sérieuse. N'ayez pas l'air alarmé lorsque je vous mets au courant. Cette femme est atteinte de la peste.
De la peste?
Elle n'a qu'une heure à vivre. Je n'ai pas besoin de vous dire...
While they talked in this language, I couldn't understand. I looked from one face to the other, trying to read from their expressions how serious my mother's illness was. But they were as casual as though they were ordering dinner. Finally, I could stand it no longer. They must. You must tell me! What is the matter with her?
Mademoiselle, your mother is ill, yes. Seriously ill. It is a collapse. Due, perhaps, to the strain of traveling. However, a week or two of absolute rest will...
A week
will...
or two? We were to go on to England tomorrow.
Well, that would be out of the question. She cannot be moved for at least several days. Right now, she must have a complete rest. The next 24 hours will be critical.
Oh,
Mama. Poor Mama.
No, 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 mademoiselle, you must not break down too. I need your help.
Yes, doctor.
Immediately I need some medicine. Will you fetch it for me?
Yes,
I must not leave your mother for a moment during these critical hours. Here, I will write down this address and a little message to my wife.
Your wife?
Yes, I have the medicine already prepared at my home. It will be faster to go there for it than to a pharmacy. There are a few chemists who have the ingredients.
But couldn't you telephone?
Oh, alas, I have no telephone.
Well, then, a messenger, perhaps.
Oh, mademoiselle, you do not know Paris en fête. With the exposition opening, nowhere can you find a reliable messenger. They are all selling souvenirs. No, mademoiselle, you will accomplish the errand more rapidly yourself.
Ah, voici l'adress. Here's the address, 24 bis Rue Val de Grâce. And here is the message to give to my wife.
But I don't know Paris at all. I'm a total stranger here.
I'm sure the manager here will give the necessary instructions to the cabbie.
Indeed, I will. If mademoiselle is ready.
Before I quite knew what was happening, I was seated in a rickety taxicab outside the hotel with the doctor's message clutched in my hand, while the hotel manager gave a voluble direction to the cabbie.
Je serai un peu assez grand pour remplacer cette vieille bagnole. Allez au petit pain, hein? Prenez la piste la plus circuiteuse et surtout ne soyez pas de retour en moins de 2 heures. Entendu?
Entendu.
Bon. It is arranged, mademoiselle. Jacques here is one of our most trusted cabbies. He will get you to the doctor's house and back in safety.
Oh, thank you so much, sir. And you will look after Mother, won't you?
Oh, indeed I will. Of that, you may be sure.
When we left the hotel, we crossed a huge square with statues around it and turned into a wide avenue which led up a gentle incline, at the top of which was a huge arch. But before long, we turned off to the right into narrower streets. It must have been 20 minutes later when we turned into another wide boulevard, and I saw another huge arch up ahead. Or was it the same arch? Driver!
Mademoiselle?
Haven't we passed that arch before?
Regardez, mademoiselle, voici l'Arc de Triomphe, là-bas la Tour Eiffel...
Driver, I don't want a sightseeing tour. I want to go to this address directly, don't you understand? Please, now take me there at once.
En fait, sans mieux, de la patience, mademoiselle. Paris, c'est une grande ville, voyons.
At last, we turned into a narrow street and pulled up before a grim gray house. The blue enamel sign on the wall read number 24 bis. I jumped out of the cab almost before it stopped, rushed up the 3 stone steps and pulled at the brass bell knob.
Oh, hurry. Hurry, hurry, please.
Oui?
The doctor sent me for some medicine. Here, please read this.
Retenez cette jeune femme aussi longtemps possible. C'est de la plus grande importance pour l'avenir de Paris et même de la France. Oh, entrez, mademoiselle.
Thank you.
Quand vous ne pouvez plus la faire.
The doctor's wife stood there reading and rereading the note as though she didn't understand it. And until I thought I would scream.
Oh, please, please hurry. Get the medicine. It's my mother. She may be dying. I must get back to her. Please hurry.
Asseyez-vous.
She pointed to a chair.
Attendez.
And slowly walked down the hall and closed the door behind her. I waited. And waited. And I wondered. Wondered about the time the taxi had taken to get here. About that arch that looked so familiar. And I was torn by the 100 nameless anxieties that torture you when your nearest and dearest is ill. And then I heard something that froze my blood. A telephone. A telephone clearly ringing somewhere in the house. But the doctor had said he had no telephone. That was the reason I must come all the way for the medicine. No, it couldn't be in this house. It must be next door or across the street. Of course, that's where the sound was coming from.
Hello?
But no.
Oui, elle est ici maintenant.
It was the voice of the doctor's wife answering the phone. Oh, no. No, what monstrous plot was this? I felt my scalp crawl with terror. Brain pounded, my head felt as though it would burst. I wanted to scream, to run out of this awful house, to run all the way across Paris to the bedside of my mother.
Voilà, mademoiselle.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Au revoir, mademoiselle.
Now, driver, please. Please, in the name of your own mother, hurry back to the hotel as fast as possible. Please.
Ben oui. Entrez de son mieux, mademoiselle.
But my pleading was of no use. Either it was misunderstood or ignored. We crawled across Paris just as slowly as we had come, and I was certain I saw that same white arch three times. But at last we crossed the great square with the statues in it, and I knew we were close to the hotel. Please, please hurry.
Enfin de sang mieux, voyons!
Just beyond the great square, we turned up a narrow street, which shortly entered a wide circle, in the middle of which was a tall, slender monument. The driver swung around the monument and pulled up before the entrance of the hotel, reached back and opened the door.
Voilà. Voilà, mademoiselle.
I jumped out of the cab. And then I saw the sign over the entrance. It said, Hotel Ritz.
Driver, you've taken me to the wrong hotel. I'm staying at the Grand Hotel Universal.
Mais non, mademoiselle, je vous ai pris au Ritz et je vous dépose au Ritz il y a 50 ans.
I don't understand what you're saying, but will you please take me to the Grand Hotel Universal?
Mais c'est ici que je vous ai pris et c'est ici que je vous dépose.
Oh, you stupid, stupid man, can't you understand? My mother is ill. You've taken more than 2 hours to get me to that doctor's house and back. Can't you understand? My mother is sick, perhaps dying.
Dieu, mademoiselle, les affaires ne me gradent pas. Donc, voici,
I looked around. A small group of passers-by had stopped and were listening curiously to the argument. Then they joined in and started taking sides. Everywhere I looked were foreign faces, strangers, enemies. And then, shouldering his way through the crowd, I saw a bareheaded young man in tweeds with a pipe clamped in his teeth. And before he had a chance to speak, I knew help had come.
I say, having some trouble?
Oh, thank heavens, you're English.
All right, you are. What seems to be the matter?
I told him rapidly as I could, and he paid the mulish cabby.
Merci, monsieur.
Popped me into another cab, and 5 minutes later we walked into the lobby of the Grand Hotel Universal. The manager was behind the desk.
My mother, is she all right?
I beg your pardon?
My mother, Mrs. Winship in 342, is she all right?
Mademoiselle must be mistaken. There is no Winship in 342.
What?
342 is occupied by Monsieur Auguste Noailles, a permanent guest.
Don't you remember me? I'm Cynthia Winship. 2 hours ago, you put me into a taxi to go to the doctor's house for some medicine for my mother.
I am afraid that mademoiselle is mistaken. I have never seen her before in my life.
Well, look here, what is this?
No, listen, I swear it to you. It's just as I say. We signed the register less than 3 hours ago. We got in on the train from Marseille.
Well, let's have a look at the register.
Yes, I'll show you I'm in 342. Where is the register?
It is there, mademoiselle. You may see it for yourself. See, today's date. 14 guests registered, but I don't see any mademoiselle or madame Winship. Do you?
No. What have you done with my mother? What have you done with my mother?
Please, mademoiselle.
You have done something
please,
with my
mother.
Please,
mademoiselle,
no,
I should not like to ask you to leave the hotel.
We'll get to the bottom of this.
Perhaps mademoiselle is mistaken. Perhaps she is registered at some other hotel.
No. This is the hotel. The Grand Universal. You were standing there when we arrived. You handed my mother the pen with which she registered. You came to the room with the doctor. You put me in the taxi.
But I assure you, mademoiselle, there are these are fantasies of your imagination.
Wait a minute.
What is it?
That bellboy there. He carried our baggage. He'll remember.
Garçon.
Oui, monsieur.
Vous vous souvenez avoir déporté le bagage de madame à numéro 342 cet après-midi?
Non, monsieur.
There were 6 pieces, don't you remember? You wanted to take them all, and I insisted on carrying the jewel case. It was a little red one?
Oh, non, mademoiselle. C'est la première fois de ma vie que je vois mademoiselle.
He says he never saw you in his life before.
But this is monstrous. It's impossible. My mother is somewhere in this hotel. What have you done with her? What have you done with her?
Now then, how do you feel, Miss Winship?
Better, thank you. This soup was very nourishing.
Well, won't you have something else? A salad, a bit of roast?
Thank you, no. A cup of tea, perhaps?
Certainly. Garçon?
Monsieur?
Une tasse de thé, pour mademoiselle.
Tout de suite, monsieur.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Do you realize I don't even know your name?
It's Bruce. Bruce Stanley.
I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Stanley.
It's a pleasure, Miss Winship.
Mr. Stanley,
You believe me, don't you?
Of course I do, Miss
We did register at that hotel. We were in room 342. I can even describe the furnishings. There was a big window that went from the ceiling to the floor.
Well, every hotel room in Paris has windows like that, Miss Winship.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Well, in this room, the draperies were plum-colored. There was a marble table, black marble it was, and a gilt clock. It had run down. The hands had stopped, I remember, at 20 minutes past three. The walls were covered in rose brocade, and the bedspread was a washed-out yellow. Oh, if I could only get into that room, you'd see I'm not making this up. I'm not.
I'm sure you aren't. Perhaps I can find a way to make them let you in the room.
Oh, can you?
Well, yes, I'm with the embassy, you know, undersecretary sort of thing. I believe the British Empire has enough influence to change the mind of an obstinate Paris innkeeper.
Then let's do it, right away.
Well, I'm afraid the might of Britain can't move that fast. It's past dinner time. But tomorrow we'll see.
Tomorrow? But I must get into that room tonight. I have no money, nowhere to sleep.
Well, we can do nothing with the people at the hotel. You saw that. We'll just have to be patient until tomorrow. I'm sure I can find a room for you tonight in a pension near the embassy.
You're so very kind. How can I ever thank you, Mr. Stanley?
Well, you might begin by calling me Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Oh.
What is it?
I just thought of something. The doctor.
The doctor?
Yes, the one the hotel manager brought in to look after Mother. I still have his address somewhere here in my purse. Yes, here it is. Oh, we must go there immediately. He can tell us about Mother.
Let's see. 24 bis Rue Val de Grasse. Well, that's not far. It's just off the Boulevard Raspail near the Luxembourg.
How long would it take to get there by taxi?
Oh, about 10 minutes.
But it took over an hour this afternoon.
Voilà, monsieur, 24 bis Rue Val de Grasse.
Well, here we are.
Yes, this is the place.
Attendez, mon vieux.
Très bien, monsieur.
The house is dark.
It's quite late.
Well, I don't care. We've got to find out tonight.
Qui est là? Qui sonne?
Where is he?
There at the upstairs window. Monsieur le docteur, c'est Mademoiselle Stanley. Elle veut vous questionner à propos de sa mère.
Stanley, je ne connais pas Mademoiselle Stanley.
He says he doesn't know you.
But he must. Doctor, don't you remember this afternoon? You sent me to your house for medicine for my mother.
Je ne comprends pas l'anglais.
He says he doesn't understand English.
Oh, the liar. The dreadful liar. He does. He speaks perfect English.
Et vous, jeune homme, je vous conseille de ne pas déranger le repos des gens comme il faut et de vous en aller avant que je n'appelle la police.
I'm sorry, Cynthia.
Oh, Bruce. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? If it hadn't been for Bruce, I'm certain I should have gone out of my mind. He found a room for me at a pension near the embassy, where I spent a sleepless night of anxiety, almost beyond endurance. Bruce called for me at 10:30 the next morning and took me back to the hotel. To my surprise, the attitude of the manager had changed completely.
Of course, Mademoiselle may inspect room 342. We are only too glad to convince Mademoiselle that her mother is not and never was in the Grand Hotel Universel.
Why, I
personally will escort you to the room. This way, please, to the ascenseur.
Oh, Bruce, that terrible man. That horrible, horrible...
Cynthia, don't let him upset you.
Monsieur, troisième étage. Troisième, monsieur.
Now, remember what I told you last night, Bruce. You'll see plum-colored draperies, black marble-top table, rose walls, and a gilt clock with a hand stopped at 20 minutes past three. You'll see.
Yes, sir.
Voilà, le troisième.
This way, gentlemen. It was room 342 you wish to see, mademoiselle?
Yes, that's right. Third door to the right.
So?
You see, Bruce, I know where it is.
Yes, madame.
Here we are. Voilà. Enter, please.
Now, Bruce, you shall see the yellow bedspread. Oh.
Not quite the room you just described in the elevator, mademoiselle. The drapes are royal blue.
No.
Oh, a little dusty, I fear. I must have this room renovated. You see, there is no marble top table.
No.
The clock, as you notice, is running.
No.
And right on time, it seems, the walls are not rose brocade, but yellow flowered wallpaper.
No.
Now, my dear mademoiselle, you see how thoroughly mistaken you are.
No, no, no!
They tried to make me think I was mad. They succeeded. I remembered nothing until I awoke in my aunt's house in England 2 weeks later, thanks to Bruce, who never left my side during those terrible days when my sanity hung in the balance. Well, that's the story, Alice. That's why I've never been able to talk about your grandmother Winship.
Oh, Mother, how horrible.
Because all these years, I've clung to the foolish hope that somehow she'd come back and tell us herself what happened.
Oh, you poor dear.
You may as well dispel that hope forever, Cynthia.
What?
Since you've at last brought yourself to discuss your mother's disappearance,
I think it's time you knew the true facts.
Bruce.
Your mother died 20 minutes after you left the hotel on that fool's errand for the doctor.
Oh, no.
She died of the bubonic plague. She'd caught it in India before she sailed. The doctor recognized the symptoms the moment he examined her. He told the hotel manager in French, in your presence. They agreed that the matter must be kept completely secret. If the news leaked out that there was a case of plague in Paris, the city would have been empty to visitors and the exposition would have been a failure.
Oh, Bruce.
The conspiracy of silence began in the hotel. The bellboy was paid to claim he never saw you. The taxi driver was paid well to take you to the doctor's house by the most roundabout route. The note to the doctor's wife advised her to detain you as long as she could. And the taxi driver added his own imaginative touch by returning you to the Ritz instead of the Universal. I shudder to think what might have happened if I hadn't come through the Place Vendôme just then.
But you didn't know.
Not then.
When did you find out?
Next morning. By then, the conspiracy had grown to international proportions. The embassy had been advised. If the exposition was a failure, the franc would fall, the pound sterling would be affected, that sort of thing. I knew when we went back to the hotel you would not find your plum drapes and rose-colored walls and black marble-topped table.
And you let me go through with it?
What could I do? I was acting under orders. I knew that the hotel had completely fumigated and redecorated the room overnight, and everything was in readiness to repudiate your story. I had to let the last act of the dreadful farce play to its dreadful end.
Mother, what did they do with Mother?
Her body was removed from the room less than 30 minutes after you left it, and immediately burned.
Why? Why didn't you tell me this years ago? Why did you let me go on all this time?
This is the first time you have ever mentioned your mother since then, my dear.
Alice.
Yes, Mother?
There's a new issue of The Tatler in the library, dear. Wouldn't you like to look at it?
But, Mother, I want to...
Now, dear. Want to have a talk with your father.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, has brought you The Vanishing Lady, by Alexander Wolcott, adapted for radio by Mr. Robeson. Cynthia was played by Joan Banks. Bruce was played by Haverback. The hotel manager and cab driver were played by Ramsey Hill. The musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week...
You are deathly afraid of snakes, and between you and a fortune, between you and escape, beyond the white jaws of a deadly cottonmouth.
Next week, we escape with Irvin S. Cobb's famous story, Snake Doctor. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I see how things work around here. I miss the days when I was your only announcer. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Mysterious Traveler entitled Death is the Judge.
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can. Where are we going? Today we're going to delve into the strange story of a Chinese bell. A bell whose ringing is a summons for the dead to live and the living to die. As you shall see in the story I call... Death is the Judge. Our story begins in a small curio shop in New York's Chinatown. Dr. John Williams, one of the finest brain surgeons in the Middle West, and his wife are celebrating their 20th wedding anniversary by a trip to New York. They have stopped in at this curio shop for sentimental reasons, just as they did on their honeymoon 20 years before.
Oh, John, it's the same. It's exactly the same as it was. Doesn't look as though a thing has been sold since we were in here last.
It certainly doesn't. If it wasn't that old Ki Wong is dead now, I'd be tempted to believe we'd gone back 20 years when we came through the door.
Even the smell of incense and ginger is the same. Mm. We must buy something, John, even if it's only a trinket, just for sentiment's sake.
If you want a trinket, how about this statue of Buddha here, huh? It only weighs about 3 tons.
Oh, silly. But what about one of these bells, John? We need a dinner bell. How would this one do?
That would be better for a temple gong, darling. Better try again.
All right, John. Oh, I have it. This lovely little bell of rose crystal. Why, it's the exact color of that rose crystal pendant old Ki Wong sold us on our honeymoon.
The lady has found something that pleases her.
Yes, this crystal bell. How much is it? And please don't make the price too high.
The price is not high, but the lady would not want it.
But I do want it. Why should you think I wouldn't?
Once it was a most unlucky bell. Now it is broken. My honored father, Ki Wong, broke it to break the evil fortune that followed it.
Broken? Where? Looks all right to me.
It is broken because it will not ring. The clapper is gone.
That's right, Mary. The clapper is missing.
But I could easily have a new clapper made.
It is not possible. Only the clapper carved when this bell was carved out of the same block of rose crystal will make this bell ring.
But that's ridiculous. I never heard of such a thing.
Oh, we can test it easily enough. Suppose I tap it with this silver pencil. That ought to make it ring.
I am happy to have you try.
Huh. That's odd. It won't make anything but that dead sound.
I'll bet I could make it ring.
You're welcome to try, my dear.
No, I don't mean now. I mean once I got it home.
When my honored father took out the clapper, he meant that this bell should never ring again. And it never will.
But why, Sam Key?
Because bell was stolen. And so... carried evil fortune with it, and because it is a bell of life. It came from a temple in Tibet. Only lamas were permitted to lay hands on it.
But obviously someone else did.
That is why it is unlucky. When my father received it 20 years ago, he took out the clapper and disposed of it. I do not know where or to whom.
But why? Just what was he afraid of?
He dare not risk having this bell ring, for it belonged to the High Lama of a tribe that believed the ringing of this bell will bring the dead back to life.
You mean this bell?
Yes, yes. You look skeptical. but it is true. When someone died whose life was too precious to spare, this sacred bell was rung beside his body, and death let go his hold. The dead returned to life.
You mean you really believe that?
It is true. But I have not told the whole story. This carving here upon the bell, it is Tibetan. It says, "Who rings this bell cheats death, but death will not be cheated."
A little cryptic, I'd say.
It means that when the bell is used to rescue someone from death, another, whose span of life is not yet over, is taken by death instead.
You mean that the Grim Reaper keeps his quota filled, even if he has to take somebody who's not on his list?
It is so, Doctor.
John, you're talking as if you believe the whole thing. It's just nonsense, of course. But what a lovely topic for conversation it'll make. I just simply won't leave without this bell now.
But if it won't ring, what good is it?
I'll make it ring. Leave that to me.
If the lady wishes the bell, the price is $5.
Well, the lady wants it, so she'd better have it, I guess. Oh, I don't want to risk breaking it while we're traveling, though. Can you mail it to our home address?
Of course.
The name is Dr. John Williams, 1766.
And so, a week later, shortly after Dr. Williams and his wife had returned home, a small package reached them. As he unwrapped it, Dr. Williams' curiosity was stirred again, and in his study, he tried once more to make the strange bell of rose crystal ring.
Curious. It really won't ring, no matter what I tap it with.
Hello, John.
Oh, hello, Mary.
You're home from the hospital early, dear.
Yes, I felt a little tired today. But look what just came in the mail.
Oh, why, it's my crystal bell. Oh, John, it's lovely. It's even more beautiful than I remembered it.
Yes, but I'm afraid Sam Key was telling the truth when he said only the original clapper will make it ring. I've tried everything I can think of.
The trouble with men, darling, is that they're not logical.
What do you mean?
Well, if the ball is of rose crystal, a rose crystal clapper should make it ring, shouldn't it?
The logic is perfect, but how can we test it?
By using my rose crystal pendant, of course. I'm wearing it this afternoon so we can try it out right away. Here, see?
Now what?
You hold the bell, and I'll tap it with a pendant.
All right, tap away, but I bet it doesn't ring.
You'll see. Now listen. There. What did I tell you?
It did ring.
Of course it did. I was sure it would, even if Sam Key's story was true. John, don't you see?
Don't I see what?
Well, my crystal pendant is the bell's missing clapper.
The missing clapper?
Mm-hmm.
Good heavens, I almost believe you're right.
Well, I am right. As soon as Sam Key told us how his father took the clapper out of the bell and sold it 20 years ago, well, I was positive he'd made it into the pendant that he sold us 20 years ago.
It should be impossible, but it certainly looks as if it must be true.
After all these years, the bell and the clapper have come back together again. You know, I knew there was something queer about that bell the minute I saw it. Queerest feeling came over me that I just must have it.
I'm not sure that I like that thought, Mary.
Oh, silly. I know you half believe that story Sam Key told us, but I didn't. Now, I have my bell complete. Now, all I have to do is unfasten the pendant and attach it to the bell again.
But, Mary...
Now, help me do it, John. Look, the pendant's loose. It'll come off the chain if I twist it. Yes. Here it is.
Mary, are you sure this is wise?
Now, if I tie it inside the bell with this thread... Darling, please hold it so I can see what I'm doing. There. Now, it's as good as new again. Listen.
Mary,
John. John, what is it?
I don't know. I don't feel well.
Oh, you're tired, darling. Now, please sit down. Sit down here.
I will. I feel better now. It was just a moment's dizziness.
You're working too hard at the hospital. That's what's the trouble.
Well, maybe. I admit I had a strenuous day. I spent 2 hours on a brain operation. Splendid boy. He looked a lot like our David. But he'll be good for another 50 years now, with luck.
Just the same, you must take it easier, John. Now, you sit still here while I fix you some spirits of ammonia, and then...
Well, that's probably for me.
Now, you sit still. I'll answer it. Hello? Yes, Dr. Williams is here. Who's calling, please? The hospital? Oh. Yes, I'll tell him. Goodbye.
Mary, what's happened at the hospital?
It's an emergency case, John. Another brain operation. And, oh, darling, you are so tired.
Can't be helped. I'm the only brain surgeon in town these days. Help me get into my coat, will you? Where's my hat?
Oh, here you are, dear.
Thanks.
Now let me straighten your tie.
Right.
There, you're ready. I'm going to drive you over and you can relax until we get there.
All right, then, but let's get going. The almost 5 miles to the hospital. Nurse, another sponge, please.
Here, doctor.
Dr. Williams, the pulse is very faint. The breathing has become dangerously weak.
I'll have to try adrenaline. The hypodermic, nurse.
Yes, doctor. I'll get it ready.
The patient has stopped breathing, doctor. And there's no pulse.
Quick with that adrenaline. We've got to get the pulse started again.
Here, doctor.
Good. That ought to start the heart action again.
There's still no pulse, doctor.
We'll try artificial respiration.
Yes, doctor.
Oxygen, nurse, quickly. Keep the pressure steady, nurse. Johnson, any pulse yet?
Not yet, doctor. The adrenaline doesn't seem to have taken effect.
Well, it must. Nurse, give me more oxygen. I'm going to continue the artificial respiration as long as there's a single chance.
I'm afraid it's no use, doctor. No sign of a pulse at all.
Dr. Williams, please rest now. You've done everything that anyone could. But he hasn't shown a sign of life, not for half an hour.
Yes, I'm afraid we're beaten.
If anyone could have saved him, you'd have done it. But death had, well, too strong a grip on him for anyone to bring him back.
Too strong a grip. Yes, I do rather feel as if I'd been wrestling with someone for this poor fellow's life. And lost.
Well, doctor, don't feel too badly. In room 8, there's a boy who has a full life ahead of him, thanks to you.
I suppose I have to look at it that way. Now, help me off with these things, will you, nurse?
Of course, doctor.
There's the gloves and the jacket. Now, what did I do with my coat? I just threw it down somewhere when I arrived here. I was in such a hurry.
I've got it, doctor. Let me help you.
Oh, thanks, Johnson. What the deuce have I got in this pocket? It's that bell. I must have jammed it into my coat without thinking in the rush to get here. Oh, look out. Catch it.
I have it. Ooh, that was close. Might have smashed on the floor. Here you are, doctor.
Thanks. I almost wish it had broken, though. For some reason, I hate the sound of it. But my wife...
Dr. Williams.
Yes, nurse?
The patient. The color's coming back in his face, and I can feel a pulse now.
What? Now, let me see. Yes, you're right. His heart's beating again.
Look, he's beginning to breathe.
Quick, start the oxygen again. I'm going to give him an injection of plasma. Make the preparation, please, Johnson.
Yes, Dr. Williams.
How is the pulse now, nurse?
It's getting stronger, doctor.
His respiration is gaining, too.
Yes, doctor. What? I've never seen anything like it.
It's almost a miracle. Now, where's that plasma?
Here, doctor. I have everything ready.
Good. Nurse, disinfect the arm, please.
Right away, Dr. Williams. Oh, here comes Dr. Bronson.
How's it going, Williams? Been having trouble?
Oh, hello, Bronson. Yes, a little trouble, but I think we're in the clear now. For a while, I thought the patient was gone, but now he's going to pull through, I'm sure of it.
Good. Doctor, I'm afraid I have bad news for you about your other patient, though.
What do you mean?
The boy in room 8, the one you operated on this afternoon.
Yeah.
He died suddenly just a couple of minutes ago. Just went like that for no reason at all.
Dr. Williams' second patient, who had come back seemingly from death itself, did live. But when the operation was over and Dr. Williams was driving back to his home with his wife, he was strangely silent and preoccupied. So that when his wife spoke to him, he did not seem to hear her.
Don't you want me to drive, John? John, I'm speaking to you.
What, Mary?
I said, don't you want me to drive?
Oh, no, thanks, Mary. I'm perfectly all right. It's just that I was thinking.
About that operation? Yes, the nurse told me about it. It was wonderful that you saved him.
That's just it. I didn't save him. He was dead. Dead, do you hear? Then for no reason whatever, he came back to life.
But you injected adrenaline and...
I injected adrenaline half an hour before he showed signs of life. Then he revived. For no apparent reason whatever.
Well, perhaps the adrenaline took a delayed effect.
Perhaps. But there was no more reason for it than there was for the boy in room 8 to die suddenly as he did.
But you've said yourself, John, that in medicine, nothing is ever absolutely certain.
That's true, but just the same, that boy's sudden death bothers me. I want to know why he died.
Well, an autopsy would tell you, wouldn't it?
An autopsy? Yes. Mary, I'm going to turn around and go back to the hospital right now. I'm going to perform that autopsy myself.
But, John, you mustn't turn here. There's too much traffic here.
There's nothing coming now. I'll just swing around.
John! John, look out! That car coming around the curve! Look out!
Stand back, all of you. Come on, get back.
Now, lady, drink this. It'll make you feel better.
Thank you, officer.
You were in an accident and knocked out for a couple of minutes. But you're coming around all right. Just drink this and lie quiet.
An accident? Yes. My husband, where is he?
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Oh, he's hurt. Where is he? I must go to him.
He's right here, ma'am. When I come along on the motorcycle after it happened, I pulled you both out. But he wasn't breathing.
John. John, speak to me.
It's no use, ma'am. I'm afraid he's gone.
John. John.
Come on, get back, all of you. Get back, I say. Now, ma'am, the ambulance will be here in a minute. If there's anything to be done, they'll do it.
There's nothing. I've been a doctor's wife long enough not to know death when I see it. Just let me sit here where I can see him.
I know how you feel, ma'am, and I hate to bother you. But if you could just tell me how it happened for my report. You see, the other driver says...
It wasn't my fault. I couldn't help it. He pulled right out in front of me. Didn't even signal.
Now, take it easy, mister. Or you'll make that bump on your head worse.
Officer, where's my bag? There's some smelling salts in it. I feel faint.
Well, here's your bag. I took care of it.
Thank you. I'll feel better in a minute.
And here's something that was in the bag, ma'am. Fell out and I put it in my pocket. It's a bell. I'll put it in your bag if you like.
Mary.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Mary. All right.
John. John!
Was that a bell ringing? Seemed so loud and clear. Like an alarm waking me up. What's happened, Mary?
There was an accident, John. But you're all right. You're all right.
An accident? Are you hurt?
No, John, no. Please lie still.
Hey, he's trying to sit up. And only a moment ago, he was dead.
Gee, I'm glad he's okay, even though the accident wasn't my fault. Here, mister, I'll give you a hand. Officer,
what's wrong? I told you to be careful. You got quite a bump on the head.
Officer, I feel so... Wait, so dizzy.
He's keeled over. Where are those smelling salts?
Here, let me look at him. I'm a doctor.
John, you shouldn't exert yourself.
Now, please, Mary.
How is he, Doc?
This man is dead.
Though Dr. Wilson protested that his injuries were not serious, he returned to the hospital where Dr. Bronson treated him. Finding nothing wrong, save a slight concussion. His wife took him home in a taxi cab, promising to see that he stayed in bed for a day or two. That night, however, neither Dr. Williams nor his wife could sleep, though they remained awake for different reasons.
Mary, is that you?
I was counting the strokes. It's midnight.
You should be asleep.
Can't go to sleep. Not until David gets home.
David? Where is he? The movie?
No. He came to me this afternoon and said there was a party at his fraternity tonight. He asked me if he could borrow the old car for the evening, and I let him have it.
But he's not back yet, John. I can't help worrying. Especially after what happened to us.
Well, I'll give him a talking to in the morning. A boy of 17 isn't old enough to be out until all hours.
You ought to be asleep yourself, John. How's your head?
It's all right. Just throbs a little. All I had was a slight concussion.
John, are you sure?
Of course I am. Didn't you hear Bronson say so? What are you getting at?
The bell. The crystal bell.
Well, what about the bell?
Your first words were about hearing it ring like an alarm wakening you. And it had just rung.
Well, what of it? It rang and I heard it as I was regaining consciousness.
But at the hospital, the bell rang in the operating room. And your patient came back to life. He heard the bell ring, too.
Don't be silly, Mary. My patient revived for natural reasons. As for me, I was just knocked out.
But both times, somebody else died, John. At the hospital, the boy in room 8. And after you returned, the driver in the other car died.
Pure coincidence. The boy probably had a blood clot on his heart. The driver had a fractured skull. It's a common occurrence for men with fractured skulls to keel over without even realizing they're hurt.
But Sam Key told us that when the bell rang, the dead would return to life. And someone living would die.
Oh, stuff and nonsense, Mary. You've been a doctor's wife long enough to know that such thing isn't possible.
But, John, I...
No, no buts about it. It's impossible, do you hear?
Yes, John. Of course it's impossible. Oh, I do wish David would get home. I feel so uneasy about him.
He'll be home any minute now. He knows that he's supposed to...
What's the telephone?
Well, I'll answer.
No. No, let me.
No, stay in bed. I'll answer.
Oh, all right, John.
It'll only be a moment. Hello, Dr. Williams speaking. The police? What is it? What's happened? An accident. My son... Where is he? Is he badly hurt? The car turned over and burned. And my son? I see. The Rockford Village Morgue. Yes, I'll come at once.
John, what was it?
Mary, I told you to stay in bed. It was just an emergency call.
It's David, isn't it? Yes, it is David. I can tell by your face. Where is he? What's happened to him?
He's been in an accident, Mary. He...
David is dead. Is that it, John?
Yes, Mary.
Take me to him. Oh, John, you've got to take me to him.
This is the place, mister. The Rockford Village Morgue. Cross the pavement, go down those steps, then along the walk to where you see that little light over the door.
Well, thank you. Mary, you must wait in the cab for me.
I want to come with you.
No, you mustn't. Promise me you'll wait here.
I want to come with you. I want to see my son.
Not yet. Promise you'll wait for me.
All right, John. I'll wait.
Be careful of those steps, mister. They're pretty steep and it's awful dark.
I'll be careful. I'll only be 5 minutes or so, Mary.
Here comes your husband back now, ma'am.
John! Oh, John, was it David?
Please get back in the cab, ma'am.
No, John, I must know. Was it David?
Yes, Mary, it was David.
Oh, I have to go to him.
Mary, stop.
No, let go of me. I'm going to David.
Mary, stop struggling. You can't go to him.
I must.
Mary, don't you understand? You mustn't see him.
I'm going, John.
What have you got in your hand?
It's the bell, the crystal bell.
What are you doing with it? Here, give it to me.
No, I'm going to ring it.
Oh, give me that bell.
No, I won't. I'm going to ring it, I tell you. There. Yeah, I've rung it. David. David, did you hear?
Mary, you're out of your mind.
I'm not. I know what I'm doing. David. Can you hear me?
Now give me that bell. There. In heaven's name, what are you trying to do?
It brought back your patient. It brought you back. And it'll bring back my son.
Mary, come to your senses. It's just a bell.
It's not. I know it's not. You were dead. And I saw it bring you back to life.
You mustn't believe that. And even if the bell were more than a bell. Don't you understand? The car turned over and burned. I had to identify David by his fraternity ring and the driver's license in his wallet.
I don't care. He's my son. David! David!
Mary, get into the cab.
I won't. Not until I have my son back. David!
Mary, won't you please?
Mama!
John, listen. David!
Mother!
David!
Mother! Dad! Where are you?
John, let go of me. It's David. He can't find us. I got to go to him.
Mary, don't you understand? He was burned horribly.
Mother! Dad! Where are you?
Mary!
Let go of me. He's my son, and I'm going to him. David! David!
Mary, come back. Mary, don't go down those steps to the morgue.
David! David!
Mary, come back. Come back.
Hey, mister, watch yourself. Look out for them steps.
Mary! Mary!
Oh! Mister, look out! Mister, are you hurt? Gosh, she fell all the way down the steps. Mister, are you all right? Here, let me help you.
Dad, here I am. I'm all right. I wasn't in the car at all. It was one of my fraternity brothers. I lent him my driver's license and... Dad, what is it? What's wrong?
He started this way and fell down these steps.
But why is he so still? Dad, speak to me.
John, speak to us. David's all right, do you hear? David's come back to us. He's come back from the dead. He doesn't answer. He isn't breathing. David. He's dead.
Yeah, lady. I guess he is. You see this glass bell he was holding? When he fell down, it broke. Looks like one of the pieces of it went straight into his heart. The bell killed him.
Mysterious traveler again. Yes, Dr. Williams was dead, but his son is alive and well, even today. Although it wasn't because the bell rang. Of course not. Anyhow, the bell is broken, so there's no way of proving whether or not it had strange powers of life and death, or whether it was just a coincidence that each time it rang, one of the dead lived and the living died. But if I were you, I'd certainly play safe. If you hear a bell ringing tonight, don't answer it. It might be ringing. Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train each week at this time.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. In tonight's cast were Maurice Toplin, Cameron Prudhomme, Eleanor Phelps, Donald Buca, Juan Hernandez, and Mort Lawrence. Original music was played by Charles Paul. The Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Bob Arthur and David Cogan. Listen next week to a tale titled
Meet Me at the Morgue.
Another strange and shivery tale of the mysterious traveler. The Mysterious Traveler has come to you from our New York studios. Ralph Paul speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.